This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to Place to Be Nation, Pops, Looking Forward, Looking Back, the show that takes a look at the worlds of pop culture and sports, as well as looking back at events and seasons of the past. Here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. I am Andy Atherton, your host, and tonight we're going to take a look back at the fall and winter movies of 2019. Yes, all those great dramas, comedies, horror movies, big budget action, anime film. It ran the gamut, all kinds of great movies. And to break it down is my usual suspects crew of great people here from Place to Be Nation. Let's start off with some lovely ladies. First, she is a proprietor over at the Jenny Position of great shows such as Freak Out Driving, Geek and Sassy, Bianca First Time, Journey Through Infinity, A Journey Through Infinity, The Journey Through Infinity. I don't know what it's called. But also on the wrestling feed, Jenny and the Gems, Extreme Freeway Dance, Talking WCW, NXT, and many more. Miss Jennifer Smith. Jenny, how are you?
Oh, Lord.
I'm doing great, Andy. How are you? Thanks for naming all my shows. You did a good job.
I hope I got them somewhat right. But yes.
Somewhat.
That's what I try. I strive for mediocrity here.
You did a great job.
Awesome, awesome. Also joining us is Jenny's co-host on Geek and Sassy over on the Jenny Position, as well as my co-host on many shows and recently a few specials here on the Pup Feed, Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you tonight?
I don't have a magical flute. What did she call it? Her Irish flute. I don't have one of those. Sorry.
All right. Well, we will not deduct any points from tonight's game, but just know that next podcast, you better have a tuba.
For fuck's sake.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Lord knows what kind of instrument this guest has, but he is Jenny's co-host on Talkin' Pop. He is over on the wrestling feed. He is on Talkin' WCW and the NXT podcast, Mr. Tim Capel. Tim, how are you?
It's not a tuba. It's not an Irish flute either. The Irish flute that I've heard much about here in recent days, and I hope that Jenny has grounded her child and confiscated said instrument, because, wow, that's you know what we say, hashtag fuck them kids, because
fuck them kids.
Mm-hmm. That's
send them to the dungeon, don't worry about it.
I see. Very good.
All right.
Well, Andy, you're getting a lot of work out of us here. This, you know, going into in February now of 2020, and it feels like we're still kind of putting 2019 to bed. Still a lot of unfinished business we've got to get to.
Just like Rose from Titanic, I'll never let go. I just don't want to see things go away. I just keep holding on to them. But no, we need 2019, and some of these movies are actually still in theaters that we're going to talk about, but I wanted it to kind of like settle, marinate, give everybody a chance to see them, because also some are starting to show up on streaming or on demand, and that way, you know, we can go full spoiler on all the movies and just talk however we want and have no fear of any ads. Nobody really does that to me or anybody I know, so let's just have some fun and just say whatever we want about these movies. We liked them, we didn't like them, particulars, who cares? Let's just have fun and do what we're here to do. So we're going to go all the way back to September to talk about a sequel that was highly anticipated, and that was It Chapter 2. Now, Jenny, I know you saw this along with Mr. Scott Criscolo, and you guys did a fantastic Pop Goes Movies that I made sure I went to see the movie so I could actually listen to. But give us some of the things you enjoyed or did not enjoy about It Chapter 2.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed everything about this one. It a lot of people had complaints about the length. I don't care. Like I was enthralled the entire movie. I loved the adult cast. You got to see the grown-up versions of the kids from chapter one. I thought they were all on point and did an amazing job. It was just a fun movie to watch. Scary as hell. I adore what's his face as Pennywise, and he was creepy as fuck.
Yeah, Bill Sarsgaard.
Yeah, Sarsgaard. Mm-hmm. And it went a little off the reservation, like towards the end, but not in any way that bothered me at all. Like, I love this movie. I want to watch it again and again and again. And I just thought it was a fantastic follow up to the first chapter.
Yeah, I saw it and I actually enjoyed it a lot. I thought it did get a little long for me. Maybe it's also because I saw it Friday night after working all day. Mm-hmm. But and also I was kind of distracted because a couple had a young child that could have been more than 3 or 4. I mean, granted, he was quiet, didn't make any noise, but it kind of as a parent, though, I just, it was in the back of my mind that this child is over there. Like, it was just bugging me. So it took me out a couple of times. I'm sorry. But no, I thought it was fun. I thought the casting was tremendous. Bill Hader, a personal favorite of mine, no matter what he's in, but he was
stole
great.
The movie.
Oh yeah,
basically.
Mm-hmm. He was great as Richie because he was hiding a secret, and it was a lot of his arc was fairly important in that one. I mean, Bill was important, but it was again another creepy bite of a child's limb. And this one, there were some laugh out loud moments too. I mean,
yeah, it was surprisingly funny. He had me laughing a lot.
The scene that had my theater laughing the most was with the old lady, where she was kind of creeping around in the background, getting naked and stuff. And I'm like, what is happening back there? And it was just kind of scary and creepy all at the same time. And I found it hard to believe that that's the same guy, whatever his name is, the grown-up version. That's the Old Spice guy. Is that correct? Who was the one guy that never left town? Mike was his name, I think.
Is it the Old Spice? Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So I was kind of weirded out a little bit by that. But no, it was fun. And as a non-horror person, well, not non-horror, but as somebody who doesn't typically watch horror movies, especially something like with a creepy clown, I enjoyed it. And I, like Jenny said, yeah, I would rewatch this, tomorrow if I could chance. So also coming out in September, we had Downton Abbey. And I know, Miranda, you're a big fan of the TV show, and you were looking forward to seeing this movie quite a bit. Did it live up to your expectations?
It surpassed my expectations. Oh. It really did. Everyone kind of thought when the show ended, they did a good job of ending it, but you still wanted more. You still had questions, and it was still left to where you could have completed it and given the fans what they wanted. And so by doing the movie, they decided to do that. And originally there were some characters that they were like, nope, they're not coming into the movie. We're going to write it. We're like, they're not here anymore. And then they did. And then I think it's 2 weeks ago, a week ago, they announced that there actually will be a second Downton Abbey movie.
Ooh.
So again, it was phenomenal. It was, they did an amazing job of paying homage to the ones that were not, because of obviously they passed during the series, character-wise. They did a really good job of paying homage and then still being in the movie or brought in, basically, if that makes sense, mentioned, she would have loved this or he would have loved that kind of verbiage. They did a really good job of turning characters that we at one time hated, and then we started to love at the end. They gave them the story arc that they really deserved in the movie. There were times that it was a little, stuffy, but that's British stuff for you. It's the British royalty humor, basically, because it is very, in this one, the king and queen are coming to Downton Abbey to visit, which was a really big deal. In that time for lords and ladies, for the queen, king and queen to say, we're coming for a visit. But it was also like a huge financial burden. So like, that's what the movie is the family getting prepared for it. Then some of them don't live there anymore. So they're coming back because this is a really big deal. They're talking about, you know, the financial implications of this and things like that.
Oh. So do you have to have had watched the show in order to understand what's going on? Or could you go in and just watch the movie?
The reason I say yes and no is because I got to do a special screening, like a pre-screening, like almost a month before it came out. And in that viewing, there were no previews, but there was like a 15-20 minute, like, let's catch you up. Like, if you remember, and it started like with details from each season that you, if you wouldn't remember, like, things in the movie that were said might be like, what? So I think if you hadn't seen the movie and you went with someone to one of those pre-screening events and you got to see that, like I said, I think it was like 20-ish minutes long, catch up from the characters, then maybe you would have been fine. But I was told by a friend that went just like regular when all the theaters had it, and she was like, oh no, mine had previews, I didn't have that. So I feel like if you were able to go to one that had that little catch-up thing, then you'd probably be just fine. You still wouldn't entirely understand, but you'd have enough background. But other than that, probably need to see the seasons.
Yeah. All right. So put that on your to-do list. We'll catch up on all the, was it 5 seasons of Downton Abbey?
Or I believe it? So.
Yeah. Okay. And they're British, so they're probably short, which is always a good thing. All right. Good. Okay. In October, the movie that kind of caught a lot of people off guard by, in terms of the box office, now the critical acclaim, and as of this taping, the Oscars have not happened yet, so we don't know how it did, but it had the most nominations, Joker. We're going to start with Tim, since we've all seen this movie. Tim, what did you think of Joker going in? What were your kind of your expectations?
I will say I thought it was a lot better overall than I was expecting. Of course, with this kind of character and the just sort of mythology that is built into this character and all of the baggage that comes with it, the big question is, can they do a quote-unquote definitive origin story for the Joker, and is that something you should even really do? And fans of the character, people who follow the comics, certainly have their very strong opinions on that, and went into this, I think, with a lot of trepidation, afraid that it would sort of presume to do that very thing and perhaps do it badly. Honestly, if you didn't call this Joker and he doesn't wear the somewhat evocative costume at the climax, this wouldn't necessarily be thought of as a Joker movie, I don't think. And part of me sort of wishes it wasn't, because I really enjoyed Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I think he is tremendous in this, and sort of better than the movie as a whole. And I like the parts of this that are more about being this sort of bizarre and very sad character study of this person who has been failed by the system in pretty profound ways, and just sort of how he spins out from that. So I think that as a collection of scenes, it's sort of better than when it's trying to be a coherent, plot-driven kind of movie. And when they do all the stuff with the Waynes, like, I didn't give a shit about any of that. But I definitely thought that the performance itself was phenomenal. Right up there with some of the best work that Joaquin Phoenix has done. So I am a little bit shook by the awards nominations it's been racking up. I mean, while I do think that again, that performance is very deserving, I don't know about going whole hog on this film. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Birdman from a couple of years back, which seemed to win all of the awards except the one it should have, which was Best Actor for Michael Keaton. I hated that movie so much. and thought that he was really great in it. Joker, I didn't hate, but definitely Joaquin Phoenix was better than the movie. So I kind of hope history doesn't repeat itself in terms of those awards, but that's sort of where I am on it now.
Yeah, Bird made me my brain hurt because I'm trying to follow.
I hated that movie so fucking much.
Figure out what's going on. So as a comics guy, though, because I don't know about deep dives and stuff, but was Arthur Fleck, is that a character or is that a made up?
No.
No?
That's just a invented. Yeah. Invented.
Okay. All right. So
invented character.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, once everybody goes, we'll kind of talk about where, if it could or should go from here. Jenny, what do you think of Joker?
I have real complex feelings about Joker because his performance reminded me so strongly of my son. And I know that sounds very weird to say, but like my son has some of the same struggles that he does. And it was very affecting for me. And I was very, very scared for my son's future coming out of that movie because mental illness and mental health, like getting help for it, that movie says a lot about it. And it made me scared for like for an adult version of my son who might have some problems in the social aspect and people not understanding him. And then seeing this outcome, it was very disturbing. And I know it's a bit of a reach, but like I just felt it, you know what I mean? Like he is just, oh my God, just so off-putting. And but also you feel for him so deeply in that role. Like Tim said, I'm kind of on the fence whether it should be like Joker or just like a, you know, just like a character study. But I do kind of like the Batman tie-in that they did. It makes sense to me. I'm okay with it. Like, I'm okay with this as a Joker origin story. But it's probably nothing that I will watch ever again just because it hurt. Like, it hurt to watch. But stunning, like a stunning movie. I really did love it. It's just, it's a tough watch.
Yeah, there are some tremendous movies that, like, you know, I mean, I've never seen Precious, but it was like, you know, that's a tough watch.
Right.
Like, yeah, these kind of movies, yeah, the rewatchability is, you know, low.
Nil, yeah.
A lot of these, you know, maybe if you're flipping and you see maybe like a particular scene, like, you know, maybe it was in the apartment and there's a chain lock.
Yes.
Something kind of funny happens.
Yes.
Maybe you'll watch that scene, but, you know, maybe towards the end a little bit too. But, you know, well, it's definitely, there were a few movies that evoked emotions like that this fall. And we'll talk about another one in a few minutes. But Miranda, now you saw Joker as well. What do you think of Joker?
I went into it with low reservations just because, you know, like they said, there's not been an origin. And so it's kind of a made up origin. And then there is such a stigma around mental health. I made the mistake of watching this alone.
I was alone too.
It was rough.
It is rough.
It was really rough. There were times when like emotionally I was drained. And I thought, this is not good for my mental health. Like,
yep.
I don't know that I should continue this. But I did. And it is, it's like Jenny said, like, you don't know how to exactly to make people understand or describe it. But like, it is, it's just, it invokes something in you and it just makes you feel like kind of understood and sad and all kinds of things at once. It was very tough to get through. And I went into this knowing that it was, because my husband saw it before me and told me in advance, like, hey, I'm not telling you not to watch this, but I can go ahead and see that there's going to be parts that are going to bother you. And I was like, okay. And he's like, not like Killing Joke bother you, but bother you. And I was like, okay, I can handle that. And I handled it, but I don't know how well I handled it. Like, I don't. The performance was absolutely stunning. I, like Jenny, do like the Wayne tie-in. I was okay with that, because I think that's kind of the only way that you really make this a Joker. Because, mm-hmm. like Tim said, and I think Jenny even mentioned it too, like, without, like, that costume makeup that we have there, if you didn't have that Wayne tie-in, it really wouldn't necessarily be a Joker movie. It could be any guy dealing with, like, horrible mental illness struggles.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, I totally agree with all your points. Yeah, the Batman or Wayne tie-ins, they kind of had to justify the title Joker, I guess. And they had to throw some ties in there. I mean, as long as we didn't see Batman, I was fine with it. Mm-hmm. As long as it didn't cross that line.
Right, it wasn't his movie. It wasn't his time. It wasn't his time. Like,
well, let me ask you this. Which story do you believe? Do you believe that he was the son, or do you believe that she was crazy? Because there's strong evidence for both, in my opinion. So I didn't really come up with an answer for that one.
I don't have an answer either.
Do you believe that she was crazy?
I maybe there was a little from both. Maybe, you know, he was the illegitimate son, but, you know, he made her crazy. You know, kind of thing.
Mental. Like,
mm-hmm.
It can be genetic, too. So yeah. There's so many possible answers to this question, in my opinion.
Well, they also suggest that a lot of his mental state may have something to do with the actual physical brain injury.
Right, yes.
That he sustained because mm-hmm. of his mother's negligence and her own issues going on. And I mean, the film is such a commentary on, like you said, Jenny and Miranda, just mental health struggles, how people with these conditions are so let down and are kind of owed a responsibility that as a society, we kind of shirk. And mm-hmm. it's also a commentary, I think, on class and mm-hmm. wealth. Mm-hmm. So you could see how Arthur and his mother, being of a much, much lower socioeconomic status, could be taken advantage of and treated poorly by the Waynes, whatever rich stand-in family you want to say it is. Like, you know, maybe the mother did have some kind of relationship, but because, you know, the Waynes have the resources and the power to make them go away, that's right. what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all that is baked in there. So, yeah, there is a degree of ambiguous writing that's going on there. So I sort of appreciated that.
All right. Glad you recovered. I thought we were going to have a Rory situation.
A Rory situation? Oh, no, shit. No.
So were you guys, all right, now in terms of box office, were you guys surprised that it became such a moneymaker?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was going to do well, but maybe not that well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because everybody bitched about it fucking nonstop
right,
on the
did.
Lead up to it. You know, it's just like, you know, what, we don't need this movie. What? Why are they doing this? It's outside of, you know, their central story or whatever the fuck they're doing
it's
at DC.
Dumb. Yeah, it doesn't yeah. take place. Like, yeah. You heard that a lot.
Yeah. It just felt like unnecessary bullshit that nobody wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And then it made $100 bazillion for some right. reason. Like, it's crazy.
Did you guys see the thing that happened at the end on the talk show coming?
Fuck no. That was tremendous.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
But it wasn't poorly done. It's not like it was an obvious and it made me roll my eyes. It was like, oh, wow, they really did it.
Yeah, they really did it.
They really went there.
I think I out loud I went, oh, fuck.
Yeah, me too.
Miranda, you were going to say something before I...
I was just going to say, I have mixed feelings on whether that's a surprise or not. Because, one, I think, while I earlier did say there's a stigma behind mental health, I think far more people are getting on board with it as a thing that should be paid more attention to. And so I think that drove a lot of people to see it once they realized that it was actually a main focus of the film. So in that sense, it doesn't surprise me. But in the overall sense, like Jenny said, people just bitched and bitched and moaned about how they didn't need it. And then they were the first ones in line to buy a ticket. So I had mixed feelings on that because I was like, I could see where it did that well because of the people that are like, you know, hey, I want to see this because you're right. We should pay more attention to this, or I care deeply about the subject. And then the people that like complained leading up to it.
I think people went just so they could hate watch it, and then ended up was like, oh fuck, this is
like
good.
This is good, yeah,
yes. Yeah. Like, and then they had to like turn on the dime and be like, it was all right.
Well, because, yeah. I mean, you look at the pedigree going in. You know, there have been so many movies that have had high pedigrees and disappoint you.
Yes.
One I always like to go to is like Cowboys and Aliens. And, you know, I mean, it was like, it was produced by Spielberg, directed by Favreau, starring James Bond,
right.
Indiana Jones. I mean, all, and then I'm sitting, I'm like, this sucks. Like I don't walk out of movies, but I was sitting there like, and this is before like, you know, this came out a while ago, and I'm like, what time does a new Planet of the Apes movie start in the next theater? Jesus. Like, just I just hate this. So then you look and you're like, Todd Phillips, the Hangover guy, and you're kind of like, Joaquin, you know, Joaquin is good, but he could be over the top and he could be a little quirky. So it was kind of like, eh, and why are they doing another Joker? But it, despite all that, I mean, word of mouth and buzz about Joaquin's performance and how gritty this story is. And, you know, as Scott likes to say, it's 1970s dirty New York. You know, you get
yeah,
that 80s,
that
like before they cleaned it up. Yeah.
I was going to say, wasn't the film actually set in the 80s? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if they spelled, did they even spell that out? But they sort of made it clear through like the technology and just the setting. And again, that grittiness. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might've been super clear and I completely missed it, but I was like, isn't this like an 80s movie?
It was. I don't remember how they mentioned it, but just, you could just tell by the fashions and that was how Manhattan was.
Everyone smoking indoors.
Yes.
You know,
And then the whole backdrop of the, what was it like the waste management crisis? Like none of the garbage was being picked up. And so it was just like on the streets overflowing and tensions were high and all of that background stuff adds to his performance. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like Manhattan in the summer when garbage hasn't been picked up.
Oh my God.
It is lovely. Imagine. Trust me. Tim and Jenny, since you were not able to be on the Oscar podcast with Miranda and I and Mr. Paul Bernardo, a little shout out, what do you guys think the chances are? I mean, Joaquin is nominated for Best Actor. If I can maybe just call up my sheet quickly and kind of go over. So I'm going to kind of jump around here a little bit. So Joker was nominated for 11. So Achievement in Cinematography. Achievement in costume design, makeup and hairstyling, sound editing, sound mixing, film editing, original score, adapted screenplay. Joaquin was nominated for Best Actor and, of course, Best Picture, and also Todd Phillips for Best Director. Now, let's not go into the weeds about, like, costumes and all that stuff, but how do you think it's going to do on Oscar night?
I feel like Joaquin's probably got that locked up, and possibly Todd Phillips has it locked up.
Oh, really?
Who's Joaquin up against for Best Actor?
He's up against Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes.
Yep, that feels like a lot to me.
I think Leo's the only one maybe close.
Here we go
again. Yeah. Without he's already got, so. Yeah, Todd Phillips, I don't know, kind of, well, I mean, a lot of these things are so political, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how well is this person liked by the Academy and all that stuff. And I mean, I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. Just
me either.
Because it's not the type of movie that wins Best Picture.
No.
So it'll pick up some of those technical categories, I think, and Joaquin's got a real shot. But then again, I thought Michael Keaton had Birdman locked up for best actor, and that didn't happen. So
I had hoped Michael Keaton got nominated for The Founder.
I don't know if you got he's great.
Oh my God, what a heel turn, huh?
A dick.
Yes. All right. So cool. Hopefully everybody checks out Joker at least once. I think we're going to.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Miranda, you and I both saw The Addams Family.
We did.
And we did talk about it a little bit on Laughing Theater when we watched Beetlejuice for the Halloween episode. But kind of just briefly kind of go over it and kind of where we see it going. I mean, basically, for me, like, I enjoyed it. My son Dylan, wanted to see it. I personally think it was because we didn't get a Hotel Transylvania this year. But I thought the voice casting was good. I was glad that Uncle Fester sounded like Uncle Fester again.
Yes.
That was like my big takeaway. Yeah. And Allison Janney was great as the, I guess, the villain in the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was a good origin story as well. Miranda.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, Miranda, on The Addams Family?
I know a lot of people were hesitant to see it, but I highly recommend it. We've actually rewatched it multiple times now, and it's still just as funny as it was the first time. There are, I don't know how many horror movie references that you have to be, like, kind of watching that take place. Like, I'll go ahead and tell you, like, the red balloon just pops up. Mm-hmm. And then there's several others as well. And that's kind of nice to see them play a little homage. And, you know, with the Addams Family, the movies that we've gotten and stuff, there was never really an origin story. So I thought it was kind of cute to start like the beginning of Morticia and Gomez's marriage and see kind of like how that became and why they lived in this creepy, kooky place and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun. So I would definitely recommend a watch of that movie. Once it's on, you know, streaming or cable or whatever your choice of viewing. Now, Parasite came out. Now, I just saw that recently in preparation for the Oscars. A friend of mine is not telling tales out of school, but a friend of mine is in a guild, so I get screeners from that person from time to time. I thought, and I knew nothing about this movie. It's a, I believe, a South Korean film.
Oh, I did watch that.
Hmm.
Oh.
That's okay. Right, because we talked about it on the Oscars.
Yes. but I would definitely recommend it.
Yes.
It's one of those movies that once you see the story start to unfold, you're like, what is happening? What else? Like, you just imagine, I mean, it's aptly titled Parasite, and mm-hmm. We don't know how accurate it is to how life is in South Korea, or at least where these characters live. But oof, it's kind of a eye-opening between the haves and the have-nots. Kind of like how you, as Tim referenced in Joker. So
separation of classes.
Yeah, separation of classes and what some of these people have to live in, what people will do to earn money or to have comforts of home, mm-hmm. so to speak. And the lengths people will go to... keep their covers.
The creep factor is there.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. There.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but from the premise, just the little two to three sentence premise that I read on Wikipedia before jumping off the page to avoid spoilers, sounded like a pretty basic kind of setup. And I'm like, okay, yeah. But the fact that it's getting so much buzz right now, I'm like, God, how good can this really be? Now I have to see it, you know? It's, mm-hmm. it's sort of like I'm trying to, again, avoid the actual details as much as possible. But for such a sort of basic sounding kind of movie and plot, I'm like, all right, I guess I got to check this out.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, oh, I guess I have to watch in order to have, like, an informed decision or to be able to, you know, say whatever I saw all the nominated movies and sat down, sorry, why, and then just got sucked into this movie and just, like, you're starting to put two and two together in your head as it's happening in the movie And it kind of like, you know, makes you think like, oh my God, where are they going to go next with this story? Like, what's happening? So I would definitely recommend checking
it out. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's just something. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it's just something else.
It's, yeah, just you just see little things, and it, once they add water to these seeds and they grow, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, and then they kind of intertwine. And, yeah.
So, yes. Anyway.
I like how vague Andy and I are like.
I know. Well, this is what, because this is a movie
really,
that...
really new, actually, like, for us here in the U.S., like.
Yeah.
And this movie has so many twists and turns that I would not be happy if somebody had spoiled it for me.
Oh, so no, I would not.
I know we're kind of in spoiler mode for some of these movies, but for this, I would say that's why we're being vague, because we don't want to take it away from anybody's enjoyment of watching this movie, because really, it's enthralling. It really pulls you in. That's something to be said about this Bong Joon-ho director.
If he can pull another one like that off, I'll watch it. Like, if I see his name on something else, I would be inclined to watch it now.
And there is talk of a HBO series. I don't know, with the same characters, but it's definitely I could definitely see this as a limited series.
Yeah, I could possibly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So hopefully Jenny and Tim get to see this movie before long. Next up was a movie that Jenny and I both saw, was Zombieland Double Tap. We had gotten together to watch the first Zombieland on Jenny's drive-in, freak-out drive-in over on the Jenny position, which was a lot of fun. We like our zombie movies.
We do.
What'd you think of the sequel, though?
Dude, this was probably the most disappointing one that I've seen in a bit. Just because I feel like they could have really done something special with this, and then they just didn't. A lot of the same, like, tropes were there. Everybody just seemed to be phoning it in for the most part. There was just nothing memorable about it. It's disappointing, too, because, I mean, I love the cast. I love the first movie, and I don't know what I wanted from this, but it wasn't what I got. So I was thoroughly disappointed with it.
Yeah, I think it kind of went through the motions at times, and I thought they didn't, I mean, go far enough with things. Like,
just felt like a retreading of everything we've already seen.
Yeah, just on the other side of the country, and
yeah,
they're a little bit older, and, you know.
Like, nothing's changed, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
And they were stupid characters. Not that they were like, oh, that's so stupid. No, they were stupid. Like, you know, it's a zombie. You know, you live in a zombie, you know, world or apocalypse or whatever you want to call it. And it's like, y'all can't be sitting here, like, you know, having sing-alongs and lighting fireworks and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Right, you're doing dumb things, basically. Yes.
These are like characters that deserve to die in movies. It was like, you wanted to see them get bit because it's like, you deserve that shit.
And a waste of Rosario Dawson as a character. Like,
she was badass.
She's badass, but like wasted in this movie.
I mean, and Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch did fairly funny parodies of Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg. But that's, you know, it's had some fun parts, but it was utterly disappointing, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
One thing I just want to go back to. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, are we kind of thinking we're about done with zombies? Like, is this part of the problem? We're just sort of sick of this trope for a little while.
I mean,
no, I'm always here for zombies.
Yeah, I kind of am too. Right. Like, I get it if that's how people feel about it, but I'm not there just because I think there are still some things you can do, although you have to be pretty creative to do them, but. Just not in this world, not in this Zombieland universe.
The zombie,
they're tapped out. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to
tapped
out. I like what you did
there.
They're
tapped out.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have to, you know, but they have to, you know, up their game a little bit, so to speak.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I'm interested to see if a World War Z sequel ever does come out. See where they would go with that. Because that movie I thought was going to be a shit show and actually turned out to be pretty damn good. I'm curious to see that Moscow scene if we get that, because there was talk of that's how the movie was going to end, like a giant Moscow scene in Moscow. Instead, we got this little intimate thing in the CDC in Wales. So, but in terms of zombie movies, yeah, I mean, like, you know, Warm Bodies, whatever. Just if you give me something a little different and
different,
you do it well, I'm there. It's like
Warm Bodies is amazing.
Oh, it was so good.
I love that movie.
And the book is freaking phenomenal as well.
Oh, is that where it's like the zombie love story thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
See, okay,
that's different and
and
very clever.
It was.
Very fun watch.
Yeah, do you, where are you guys on Walking Dead? Are you still watching, tapped out, or
done.
I'm still watching it.
So done.
I'm still watching it.
Whole story that if you follow me and Jenny, you know the whole explanation of Miranda and Walking Dead.
I'm about 8 episodes of last season to go on Fear the Walking Dead. I just have not had the time of the
Watching the Fear Walking Dead.
You know what? It was and then it got better.
Mm-hmm. And now, I already got better, but I never watched it.
Now it's like, well, Morgan's there, and now they got Dwight, mm-hmm. and now it's like I kind of want to see where it goes, and then they have this other one coming out soon too. This whatever the hell the damn thing is called with the kids that are growing up in the Walking Deadiverse.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I'm there to check it out. Plus, you know, my daughter watches it now, so you know, it's something we can talk about.
Okay.
So and she, you know, she had a thing for Carl.
and
now Jesus, she watches his the actor's new show just because of him.
Yeah, he's
like,
hot.
She's like, when's Prodigal Son on? Come on.
Yep.
So I just wanted to jump back to Joker really quick. Now, the talk of a sequel or possibilities, do you think that's a story that's one and done, or you think that a sequel or anything or trying to link it to any kind of universe, is that good idea? Could it happen? Should it happen kind of thing? Tim hasn't really chatted much for a few minutes. Let's give Tim the floor.
I don't think it's a good idea, but yeah, they're probably going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how much money Joker made.
Yeah, you can't. It's too tempting.
I think they're going to. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to make this new Batman movie with Robert Pattinson, right?
Uh-huh.
Great. And then, but they're going to try to be cute with it. They're going to try to have their cake and eat it too, with saying, well, it's not necessarily set in the same universe as Joker, but we're not saying it isn't either. Like, it's going to be one of those bullshit things where you're like, come on, just make up your fucking mind and commit to an actual vision instead of trying to string people along. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. As far as Joker itself getting a sequel, I mean, it just, the way that they ended it, it was like he is not necessarily the Joker who's going to be operating in direct opposition to Batman, I guess, but they could say like he inspired the Joker. Mm-hmm. He inspired this movement, right? And maybe they do that sort of spin on it to just keep the story going. Even though that felt like a pretty, you know, definitive conclusion at the end of it. It's not like Arthur Fleck's story is going to continue, you know? I mean,
yeah, the idea of the Joker could continue.
Its story. Mm-hmm. It told its story, and it sort of left the world out there to still be explored if someone wishes to do so. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what they're going to do.
All right. Jenny, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say there's just way too much money left on the table for them to not try to make a sequel out of this. And we just know too much about DC at this point. So it's like, yeah, they're probably going to try to do some fuckery with that.
Yes. Miranda?
Probably going to try to. I don't think they should. I think it should be left as it is.
Yep. Leave it.
Yeah, and I think Joaquin should be nowhere near this, or if he is, he's like in the beginning of the movie and like gets killed off or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was great. He was. But this is, I feel like this is a standalone. This is truly like, it's one story. You told it. We've done it. It was fantastic. We're done. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel.
All right. So also in October, now, this was a movie that when I described it, I remember, Tim, you had quite the reaction to the plot description of Jojo Rabbit. So, and you just saw it recently, so it's really fresh in your mind. So what do you think of Jojo Rabbit? What are your thoughts?
So I think this one flew a little bit under the radar. A lot of folks maybe didn't see it or didn't get the opportunity to see it in theaters. This is the one directed by Taika Waititi. Taika Waititi, Dominic Duke, if you prefer, which is set in wartime Germany and World War II, focuses on this little kid who's a member of the Hitler Youth, and he has an imaginary friend, and that imaginary friend is Adolf Hitler, who is played in the film by Taika Waititi. So pretty irreverent idea there. You know, that's sort of asking a lot. High concept, yes, going in. And the film it's very funny. It was not as sort of biting and satirical as I thought or maybe hoped it was going to be. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot, but I guess I thought it was going to be a different kind of movie, but it wasn't. It was actually a little bit more serious in terms of like sort of tugging on the heartstrings in ways that I did not expect from a Taika Waititi playing Hitler as an imaginary friend movie would be. So I see why it's Jenny's dying. I see why it's sort of racking up nominations again in awards season here. I don't really think it's going to win many of them. But yeah, I mean, if it's one that you have the opportunity, you should check out. Mm-hmm. I know that, I mean, it's a little bit uncomfortable seeing your point of view characters as like a bunch of Nazis, which is very much the case in this movie. But I kind of think I think the most effective way of combating that sentiment is the sort of absurdist humor take that is employed by this film. Just make fun of them seems to be a lot more effective than just chopping all their heads off, which, don't get me wrong, I'm all for, but they always seem to come back when you do that. And I think just sort of clowning on them, because they are clowns, goes a lot further. So I don't know. I sort of enjoyed it from that angle. I wish it had been a little bit more, almost a little bit more RoboCop than Wes Anderson by way of The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, you know?
Mm-hmm. I understand. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, and it was something, again, I was looking forward to for a while once I, you know, saw the first trailer, and because, you know, it's Taika Waititi is so hot these days, and, you know, I'm not a fan of, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, like, you know, I guess, not necessarily Dr. Strangelove, but, which I'm actually not a big fan of, but it was definitely funny, had a lot of funny people playing it straight but still being funny. So you had Sam mm-hmm. Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant, all, you know, doing great performances. Yeah. Scarlett Johansson was phenomenal in this movie. She's
really great in this.
She earned her nomination. And if it wasn't for Laura
Dern... She's had a busy year.
If it wasn't for Laura Dern in Marriage Story, I would think she would she would be winning this, but I think Laura Dern could beat her out for that. So, but I mean, there were a few characters that stood out too. Like, I love Yorkie, the little boy who's JoJo's best friend.
Oh yeah.
You know, some very funny lines like "It's a tough day to be a Nazi," kind of thing. You know, and he's actually cast as the lead in the Home Alone TV series. Now, I don't believe he's playing Kevin McAllister, but he should be a lot of fun. But it's also, you know, really dark at times, we'll say.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where my girlfriend actually cried, you know, on the way home after seeing this movie because of some things that happened in it. And it did not pull its punches, so to speak, or shy away from things. So I'm trying to be as vague, because much like with Parasite, this is not a movie that I would want to spoil. So that's as far as I'm going to go with what I'm going to say about Jojo Rabbit. But I hope it takes home something. I don't think it's going to take home much at the Oscars, but I hope it takes home at least an award or two.
I mean, it's not Schindler's List. Not tonally, not in content, not, you know. But it also is not, you know, skirting around the fact that, as I've said in the past, Nazis make people feel bad. So keep that in mind.
Yes. And in terms of the Oscars, it was nominated for costume design, production design. Let me see what else. Film editing, best adapted screenplay. Scarlett was nominated as well as for best picture.
Five nominations for it.
I believe it was. Let me look.
Six.
Okay. Yeah, this Marriage Story, Little Women, Parasite all got six. So definitely hope it takes home something. Maybe costume design. Who knows? I would highly, again, another one I'd highly recommend. Now, to close out our first segment here tonight, the movie Black and Blue. Now, Tim, you're the only one who saw it.
Okay, so I did realize this was following JoJo Rabbit, but I wasn't thinking about that when I put my name down. because this was one of those How the Sausage is Made, folks. We aren't talking about all of the films that are on our list, and in some cases, we're only talking about films for the sake of making a crass, tasteless joke. which was my thinking here, because you see, I'm still going to make the joke.
We hope you would.
And it will be crass and tasteless. Too much setup for too small a joke, actually. I did not see Black and Blue, but I was just really tickled by the fact that my favorite 1990s interracial adult film got a re-release. Good on it. Didn't think I'd see that one in theaters.
All right. All right. 5, 6, 7. All right. Cool. Oh, well, thank you, Tim, for...
Told you it wouldn't be worth it.
It's always worth it.
I enjoyed it.
Cam.
Don't worry about it.
All right. So, that will.
All right.
On that note, we were going to take a break, talk about some. Alexa, shut up.
Fuck yourself.
This always happened.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll talk about movies came out in November and December of 2019 with Tim Capel, Jenny Smith, and Miranda Berthold. I am Andy Atherton. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nation, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the latest episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back, where we're looking at the fall and winter movies of 2019, giving you our thoughts and what we, you know, thought of them. You know, sorry, the lack of change of words was not good there. I'm saying my mouth. And I'm sober. Anyway, I'm here with Jenny Smith, Miranda Berthold, and Tim Capel. Before we get back to the movie reviews... We're going to talk about we have a snort. Okay. We're going to talk about what's going on here on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Plenty of great content for you right here. The Hard Traveling Fanboys, longest running weekly episodic comic podcast in all of Place to Be Nation with Greg Phillips and Nick Duke. DC for You, an in-depth look at the world of DC Comics with Russell Sellers and Todd Weber. Marvel Age, where Tim, along with Nick Duke, Russell Sellers, and Todd Weber, are going back through the history of Marvel Comics. Laugh in Theater, it's one of my shows where we do live watches of comedy movies. Everybody on here has been on the show at least once. The Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, where siblings Kevin and Mary are reliving the classic sitcom The Office episode by episode. The Great Debate, a podcast where I host a panel through a series of arguments on topics far and wide in pop culture. The Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, brings you deep thoughts from the minds of Glenn Butler and his family and friends. This Week in the NFL, Cowboy D'Amato, which is probably changing over to This Week in Sports since the NFL season has concluded. Congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. The NBA team, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich, cover the world of hoops from coast to coast. Year in Pop, a deep dive of pop culture year by year, co-hosted by myself, Scott Griscolo, joined by Dr. G and D'Amato. Diamond Conversations, where host Chad B brings in guests from in and around the baseball world for in-depth conversations. Sunday Groove, a podcast for movie lovers far and wide, hosted by David Sunday. And also, typical, topical, typical pod blast podcast, like Pop Goes Movies, Pop Goes to Classics, Pop Goes to the Couch. Also, check out the PTBN Wrestling feed, which includes a deep dive topic for any gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear, including the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Wrestling Warzone, Extreme Three-Way Gents, Danny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, Talking WCW, the new NXT show, and much, much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well. New home for Geek and Sassy, Talking Bop, Freak Out, Drive-In, Telling Stories, and much, much more. Okay, so back to the movie. So we left off, we finished September and October. We are talking about movies that were released in November. Now, this movie had a limited release on the theaters, but has been available on Netflix ever since it came out. I want to talk about The Irishman. Now, Tim, how many sittings did this take you to watch?
One.
One? You were.
Yep.
you are a better man than I.
Can I just say, actually, I'm going to be a dick now. I saw a thing on Twitter, like, right around the time this movie was released, because I think, like me, like everyone, you sort of were scrolling Netflix around, like, Thanksgiving. I think that sort of weekend is when it dropped, which was good timing. But you're on Netflix looking for something to watch with your family, with your company, and you see this, and then you see the runtime, and you go, what? And it's pretty intimidating, right?
What is
that?
About 3.5 hours, right?
Yeah. I think it's more. And I saw this thing on Twitter. It was like this little screen cap and like infographic or something. It was like, how to watch The Irishman as a miniseries. And it was like divided into 5 parts with different runtimes. And then somebody like quote tweeted it and said, just watch the fucking movie. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's one thing if you're in a theater for 3.5+ hours because you've got previews, you've got whatever else going on. That's really asking a lot. And you're gonna have bathroom breaks, so you're going to miss stuff. But, I mean, you're sitting here watching this at home. And, yes, it's a long movie, but so what? I mean, you can watch it at your own pace. You can pause it. You can go do what you need to do, come back. You can take breaks, but still get through it effectively in one sitting. It's not like you're going to go, oh, my God, I've got to come back to this in a week. It's too much. You know, it's just – it's not really that kind of movie. It's pretty – I found it pretty engaging end to end. There are some slower parts, but – I don't know. I just have the attitude. You know what you're going into it when you sign up for this. You see that runtime, and within the first 10 minutes, I would say you know if it's for you or not. And if it's not doing it for you, then don't commit to the rest of it. Like, I don't know. I thought it was not the greatest thing I'd ever seen, but was sort of Martin Scorsese telling the world that he still competently knows how to put a decent movie together, and we will still enjoy watching Robert De Niro and Al Pacino doing their thing in this movie, and Joe Pesci, of course, who I didn't even recognize at first. It just, you know, checked those boxes. Is it something that feels like it had some story that needed to be told? Not particularly. Unlike Joker, there's a real lack of ambiguity here. I mean, it pretty much says, maybe it's revisionist history, but it's pretty much saying, here's what happened. And you're like, okay. And I sort of appreciated that. But it doesn't really leave anything to the imagination. And you know what? That's fine. I sort of hope this is the last thing that, like, all of them do. I think it's a pretty decent piece of work to go out on. Not that I say that I'm hoping, you know, they die this year or something. Just that, like, I don't really need to see another hard Scorsese movie. Like, I don't really need to see a new Robert De Niro movie after this. So it's sort of a nice swan song for Scorsese and his just sort of repertoire of actors. So,
all their careers are over, is what you're saying?
Yes, I've declared that they're over.
Yes.
Look,
Tim is done with you.
As Chad Campbell put it, those are some business exposing kicks by De Niro at the beginning of that film. That age regression technology can only do so much.
Yeah. Oh. Now, I did share that how to watch in a miniseries. I fully.
That's why I was being a dick.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. I'll allow it, and I'll accept it. I intended to watch this in one sitting, but you know, with the factors of got home late from work, had to play a game of Madden where I got my ass kicked by Roger's nephew online, and then. So I had my tail between my, you know, my tail got kicked. And then I started eating dinner at like 9 o'clock at night. Then starting to watch a 3.5 hour movie about 10 o'clock. I cut my losses and I actually looked at that thing. I'm like, all right, I'm almost to this one point halfway through the movie. And then I picked it up a couple of days later and fully intending to finish the movie. It was okay. It was kind of fun seeing some of these actors in some of these parts. You know, some...
Martin Scorsese's movie is not a miniseries. This is a betrayal of his artistic intent, Andy. How dare you?
Just well, I also will say that, you know, superhero movies are not just theme park rides.
Oh, God.
You know? And I have another question about Martin Scorsese. When did him and Jonah Hill become so close? You know, I don't know if y'all saw that commercial during Super Bowl. Yeah, it's Martin Scorsese like, Jonah, where are you? I'm like, really? Party
all the time. Everybody knows that, Andy.
Oh, I didn't know they were besties. But yeah, I thought it was, De Niro.
Wolf of Wall Street, right?
Exactly.
He was, yeah. Wolf of Wall Street. Gotta
but,
be.
You know, Pacino was over the top. Didn't realize that Jimmy Hoffa loved ice cream as much as he did. I want to know what that bread was that Pesci and De Niro were eating every time they got together. But it was nice to see Joe Pesci.
Oh, that they dipped in the wine.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah,
but it was nice to see Joe Pesci on the screen. He's one of those guys you kind of don't realize you miss until you kind of see him doing his thing again. Like I said, though, it was nice seeing Sebastian Maniscalco as God, what was his name? The mobster that gets killed in Umberto's clam house. He's in it. And then I think it's Jim Norton plays Don Rickles. Lil Stevie's in there. You know, Silvio from The Sopranos. He plays, I think he plays Bobby Van or, no, Jerry Vale. So it's one of those, it's like, even if the movie's okay, just watching the set design and the you know, the kind of the period piece part about it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So also in November, Miranda, you saw Midway and you had a fun experience at the theater. You want to talk about it?
I did. I'll be brief because I went pretty in depth on an episode of Geek and Sassy. Mm-hmm. But my son and I got the ability to do a pre-screening of the movie where they were holding a special event because we live in a military town. And a few of the guys that are here locally at Fort Rucker were military historians on the movie, making sure things were accurate. So they actually brought different items that would have been used. They had information from a young man from the area that was part of the Battle of Midway, and they had like his uniform and information about him. And then prior to the movie, there were they did like a, I guess it's kind of like a PowerPoint. They showed you maps of Midway and said like, hey, and you're watching the movie, like, we're not going to tell you everything, even though it's a historical event. You probably already know about it. Like, here's some information about it. Here's some key players. Here's, you know, key moments and things like that that you'll get to see in the movie. So that was really cool. And then we got these commemorative like pins, like lapel pins, but they're just like, yeah, I guess they're called lapel pins. You don't really wear them there anymore. People don't do that. They more collect them and put them on like backpacks and stuff. But we got some of those as well. And it was a really, really cool experience. And like the gentleman next to us fought in World War II. And so it was kind of really surreal to be in there with basically a theater full of like active duty and veterans watching this movie and to see like their emotion when they were watching it. And it was truly emotional and it was very stunning. It was very well done. The acting is great. Overall, it was just phenomenal.
All right. Very cool. Now, also coming out the same day back in November was Dr. Sleep, the long-awaited sequel to The Shining. And Jenny, being a horror thriller maven, you were looking very forward to this. What did you think? Did it live up to your expectations?
Wow, yes. So happy that this one actually lived up to the hype a little bit because it is a sequel to The Shining. And I've never been a huge Shining fan. I watched I watched it the weekend before I saw this movie, just to sort of like refresh myself on everything. And having seen it very recently, I was very impressed with some of the recreations that the sequel did and some of the flashbacks to the original. And then everything that they did that was current day, I thought was pretty awesome. They have an amazing villain in this story, a female villain, which I thoroughly enjoyed. There are a couple of trigger warnings in this movie. There's a particularly violent child death in it, and it's pretty brutal to watch. If that is triggering for some people, which I know it is, but that being said, like, it sort of adds a lot to the movie as well. So as far as it being scary, it wasn't very much so, because so many things are explained to you, but it is supernatural in many aspects. And I thought Ewan McGregor was really, really good as the grown up little boy from The Shining. And then there's an outstanding young talent, and I don't know her name, but she is the main young actress in this movie, sort of kind of the main character, kind of opposite Ewan McGregor. And wow, she was just stunning, and it was kind of shocking to me how much I love this, not being a huge fan of The Shining originally. So I would definitely recommend this, for sure.
All right. Miranda, you saw it as well. What do you think of it?
I did. I did love The Shining, and I thought it was really well done. I'm with Jenny. Everybody was like, oh, it was really creepy, it was really scary. I didn't really find it creepy or scary. There was moments of, like, strange. I would agree definitely with the trigger warning, because once I realized that was happening, it is a huge part of the story, but if you needed to skip it, you could. But it's rough. Not necessarily creepy, scary, but more like hard to see. I think is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So I watched it with like my nephew and our babysitter, and they were like, oh my God, it was creepy. It was creepy. How is that not creepy to you? And they loved it. I just didn't find it in that aspect. And I hate to say this, people might get mad at me, but like the ending, the plot twist that I won't like give away, I figured it out before it happened. Like I figured it out and was like, oh, that makes sense. And then they were both like, how did you get that? And I'm like, I don't know. So I guess to me, maybe a little predictable. But I liked it. I did. I'd watch it again.
Me too. Yeah. I want to watch it again.
And you definitely will have seen The Shining, right? To know what's going on.
I mean, there a lot of, well, sometimes when they get back to the hotel, like towards the end, there are a lot of like shot for shot.
Yeah, like, you're not going to
recreations, but like technically you could probably muddle through, like, but so. You would enjoy it a lot more if you had seen The Shining, for sure.
Agreed.
All right, cool. Now I'm the only one that saw Ford v Ferrari. It was very enjoyable. Like I probably said before on the Oscar show, though, it was one of those movies that you'll enjoy at home, but in the theater you can kind of feel the sound of these races and how up close you get. I think it's probably enhances the experience a little bit. I thought the performances were good, especially Christian Bale. He got to basically use his natural voice, and it kind of shows, and he kind of chews up the scenery, is their phrase, which was enjoyable. Best Picture, which it's nominated for, I don't really see it, but, you know, hey, you know, it's good that they nominate more movies these days. Now, Miranda, you saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is something I really wanted to see but didn't get a chance to. What did you think of that movie?
It's actually really good. It's really heartwarming and hits you in several feels. At first, I was like, do we really need a movie? Like, is it needed? I just think it's really, I don't know, it pays really good homage. It was just really like warm and fuzzy. It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Now, Tom Hanks was nominated for supporting actor.
He was.
Was that
we
really
discussed
a support?
That on yeah. Oscars.
But for
yeah.
for this crowd, was that really a supporting role? Do you think?
Yes, because technically in the movie, the gentleman that is doing, and I would have to look up who it is because right now my brain is going dead, but the gentleman that is like the reporter, the man that is doing the story on Mr. Rogers is the main character. He would be the lead. So in this instance, yes, Tom Hanks is a supporting role.
Mm-hmm. All right. So also coming out in November was Frozen 2. Amazingly, I'm the only one that saw it. My daughter wanted to see it, much like she wanted to see the first one when she was much younger. When did the first Frozen come out? That was like, what, 2010?
Yeah, he then was in 12? Kindergarten, first grade. So
that was, what, like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that? So my daughter was like 11 when the first one came out.
Oh, yeah, she would have been like right all over it.
Yeah, she was all over that. We had Anna and Elsa stuff in the house. Though she wasn't like little. But,
right.
You know, we did do some Frozen stuff when we went to Disney back in the summer of 2018. And she, you know, she was down. She was like, I want to see this movie. My son was like, nah. We're like, all right, well, stay home then. You know, and it was fun. I mean, it didn't have all the magic, I guess, of the first one. But it was definitely a good sequel. It was kind of surprising that it didn't get nominated for Best Animated feature. But it could still win for Best Song. So we'll see.
It could.
You'll probably know if I'm right or wrong when the time is coming.
Andy, out. I have a question about this movie.
Okay.
Because I saw a skit on Saturday Night Live last weekend in which it is suggested that Elsa is a lesbian. And is there anything in Frozen 2 that would lead you to believe that?
That's been talked about since Frozen 1. That's been something that's
been talked about a long time. I was just curious because of the skit, and I was like, is there something crazy and wild that I did not hear about in Frozen 2?
I think they kind of hint at it a little bit. I'm trying to rack my old-ass brain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they never really give her a male love interest, but I think they may hint at I think there's somebody in like another tribe or whatever, that magic thing where it's there's like this kind of like
similar to what Elsa can do.
Yeah, you have to go.
And they kind of insinuate. I do know that from not.
So is it more of a lack of a male
it
romantic,
is.
Or is it more of a attraction to a female?
It could be just this is a person that she finds attractive. I think I would say the heart wants what the heart wants. How's that? Oh, bless your heart. Anyway. did I use it correctly? I'm not sure. Anyway.
I'm trying to do it.
The Northerner uses a Southern bless your heart. Mark the state down. All right, so.
Turn you into one of us.
Be one of us. Start saying y'all. Anyway.
One of us.
I'll start playing my flute.
No, we're done.
No, okay. I apologize. All right, anyway, so. a movie I was really looking forward to, and it did live up to my expectations, was Knives Out. Came out around Thanksgiving. Jenny, you also saw this movie. Tell me what you thought of Knives Out.
Dude, I love this movie. It's so much fun. It keeps you guessing. Super, like, cool clue sort of feeling to it. Like a really fun whodunit murder mystery with lots of interesting characters. And I just thought it was everything. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I kind of heard rumblings of maybe some sort of franchise being built on this. I'm kind of on board with that.
Yes, I am so there for a franchise. I loved it. It was a modern day whodunit, like a Poirot. For the new generation. Somebody who had to sit through the old Poirots at work. It was a much better. Well, the old ones.
Yes.
Those all blend together into one long movie.
Whatever.
But no, it was a lot of fun. Daniel Craig does chew up the scenery quite a bit. I think Chris Evans was like, he kind of like unleashed his like inner asshole for the most part, because he's like, you know, I have to be Cap, I have to be, you know, America's, you know, sweetheart, so to speak. And in this movie, he's kind of like a real douche.
Yeah, he is a douche.
Which was really fun for him to see, because he seemed like he enjoyed doing that. The girl, I forgot her name, the character's name, but she was incredible, and she's not really been in the biz for a while. You know, Christopher Plummer, even Don Johnson. Some of the whole family was, you know, they were not people you wanted to root for. It was kind of like, you're like, when you try to figure out who did it or who the killer was or whatever, you're kind of like, at different points, you are hoping for each one of these people to be the one that did it. So that, you know...
you're like, and screw you, and
they
screw you.
Got their
come That's up. What it sounds like.
They got their comeuppance. And not going to give it away, but the one of the characters has an interesting character quirk about kind of like a poker tell. And something very unique, and they actually, you know, pay it off at the end of the movie. So,
yes.
So everybody who hasn't seen it, and you do, look forward to that. So the next on our list is a Netflix original that was released shortly, Marriage Story. Now, Tim, I know you were kind of like live messaging, I guess, live chatting as you were getting through this movie. What did you think of Marriage Story?
This took longer to watch than The Irishman.
I was about to say. It's like,
it really did. And not because it was a bad movie. I didn't like dislike it. It was just the type of movie it was very easy to get distracted from. You could, you know, get up and do other things and then realize you missed about 20 minutes and you have to, you know, go back. And then you're like, wait, I'm still not following. And all right, let me start it over. Oh, I've been drinking, so I'm being a little bit forgetful. I got to start it over again. Wait, what's going on Twitter right now? Let me check that. Oh, shit, I've got stuff in the oven. Let me take that out. It's just...
Google images of Adam Driver. Okay.
Perhaps. I guess, I don't know. It's sort of built around that one scene, Andy. You know what I'm talking about, right? Just the kind of blow up that they have in his apartment, which is a very actorly type of scene. I see, and it's a powerful performance from two very powerful actors, and Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. And it's also that scene that all of your friends who are themselves actors who have had acting experience or who are acting adjacent sort of roll their eyes and go, oh, we had to perform that so many times in improv class. And just, you're like, oh, God. And
I performed that scene in real life.
Or I was going to say the other side to that, if you have experienced what this couple is kind of going through, might strike a nerve. But I don't know. Outside of the performances, which I enjoyed, same kind of situation as Joker. Like I liked watching them on screen, but at the end of the day, it's a movie about these two rich people arguing about whether they're going to live in New York or LA and who could give a shit. You know, they're having this kind of very reasonable disagreement that they are blowing up to incredible proportions, which I understand
is going to happen in a divorce when emotions are running hot, but it's just sort of like, to take it down to the level of the average person watching this, you're like, fuck both these idiots. You know, it's just,
yeah, there was,
I struggled with that for sure.
I mean, as somebody who is divorced and, you know, you do have arguments like that, there were some things and I'm like, no, I was like, no, that's no. That's not mine. At least I could say that, you know, some of the scenes like did not resonate or like were not believable, or maybe it was, and maybe mine was atypical, so to speak. Like you said, though, I thought the performances were good.
Well, you were a New York based family, Andy. You put your foot down and said you weren't going to move out to L.A., right?
No, I was the one that wanted to go to L.A., actually. She wanted to stay in New York.
What the hell?
No, we're
for his screenwriting career, obviously.
Obviously. Mm. You know, I'd be making those millions right
now. You were the Scarlett Johansson in this movie.
I was the Scarlett Johansson. I even may have the same haircut. I don't know. But...
Same face. And...
But no, it was good performances.
You like that tea with the Manuka honey and the cookies and Laura Dern.
I loved Laura Dern in this movie, by the way. She was so L.A., not like any lawyer I've ever met in my life. You know, where she's your best friend, but then she'll cut your balls off in the next scene kind of person.
Yeah.
You had the best line about Ray Liotta. What was that line about Ray Liotta?
Oh, that I said while I was watching
Yes.
it.
What does he kind of look like now?
He looks like...
oh, God, that was so funny.
He sort of looks like some kind of albino gorilla. Like, all of his hair has fallen out, and he has that bizarre appearance that just... And I think someone attributed that to his Chantix.
I think that was me.
But that was someone else, not me. But yeah, he does have that very animalistic, bestial sort of appearance now.
Bestial. But I mean, it was a movie of good performances, but I think on the whole, the movie was like, kind of thing. The movie wasn't as some of its parts, or what, I don't know what the phrase is, but it's like the parts were good, the whole. So, not a bad movie. Talking
it
about
super depressing to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, nah, skip.
I've had several people tell me that because my husband isn't here because he's overseas right now, that like, not that it has anything to do with our marriage, but because it is like just kind of about marriage in general, that I might not want to watch it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't think if you're married, you should watch any stories about marriage at all.
I almost wonder though, like, because it was so just kind of removed from most just everyday kind of average people that I don't know. Maybe they do a good enough job, Andy. You could tell me of bringing their problems back down to earth. But again, I sort of read it as these two really privileged dickheads arguing over which rich city they're going to live in. Like, I mean, these are not normal everyday problems that I think most people in marriages and divorces are going to have to deal with, but I don't know. I'm probably talking out of my ass. I've never been married or divorced. So.
Well, I mean, it does, you know, it covers like the whole, like, you know, how people are not the same at this age, you know, when you met them or when you married them, to now when you're like, you wake up and you're like, oh, we're not doing anything. Promises have not been fulfilled and blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Then they also kind of show like, you know, I don't know how it could be like, you know, you could try to be amicable, and that from people I know, you know, and mine, it never works out that way. It always devolves, and you have to kind of, you know, can't be like, okay, well, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to shake hands. And no, 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 that's never going to work because people are, you know, say one thing and then they want something else, or, you know, they just try to get it done and then they realize, nope, that's not what I want. So we kind of portrayed some of those aspects, I thought, I don't know, somewhat accurately. I'm no expert, but, you know, it was, there were some aspects and I was like, kind of like, really, you're what? You're getting divorced and you show up in the, at, in LA at the house and everybody's like, hi, how are you? Okay. And, you know, it's like weird to me. I don't know.
But I thought the scene where he gets served was very funny, yes, actually. Yes. And I mean, it was sort of played for laughs until the last really minute, but the whole build up to that was pretty well done. And I was just cracking up.
Yes. The Merritt Weaver did a tremendous job.
Yeah. She's great. I love her.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, a movie that none of us saw, but, I would be wary of a future summer movie wager contest. Cats. That just screams hate watch.
It's not a bird movie.
No.
Yeah, no, I want to get super fucked up and watch this movie with you guys.
I don't want to watch it at all.
I do.
Can yes, we? You do. Admit it.
No, I do not.
We must. We must.
Just for fun.
Oh, God.
Miranda, you better win. Look, the next summer movie wager.
All of us going into the summer movie wager should just agree that our choice is
this
Cats.
This is it.
That whoever wins, that's the winner's choice.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who wins, in other words.
Oh, no.
Does it ever?
No, not really. It's just, we're all going to get together and do a pod one way or the other.
It's all popularity.
See, the problem, the problem is, okay, that took derailed my train of thought. And you know that my that train of thought isn't the stablest thing in the universe to begin with. But no, I mean, aren't they like fixing the seed as much as they can? They're trying to fix some of the really bad, like where characters still have their human hands as cats that they that
do. Before you put it in the theater, then
I don't want to see that version. I don't want to see the fixed version. I want to see the fucked up version.
I want to see the fucked up one, too.
Yes, please.
So we have to make sure. God.
Maybe Andy's friend at the Academy or whatever the fuck can get us a good copy of that fucked up version.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to speak to that person, but I don't think they got it because it's a certain deal.
Oh, you don't think they screened this one for the Academy?
Well, no, not the Academy, but this person's not in the Academy. They're in a guild, and unless it's up for that specific guild, they don't get the screeners for it.
I'm sure they know somebody.
The guild took a pass on this one.
But by the time the summer movie wager comes to pass for this summer, this will be available readily, I'm guessing. They will actually give it away. With a tank of gas.
Yeah.
Okay.
And instructions.
Yes. So we're going to skip one movie because we'll close with it. But now also coming out in December was Bombshell. I'm the only one that saw it. It was basically the whole Roger Ailes story over at Fox News of his indiscretions with female employees. You know, we had Charlize Theron and Nicole Kidman portraying real life people, and Margot Robbie who played a character that was not real, but it was kind of like a mixture of different people. It was you know, Gretchen Carlson was played by Nicole Kidman, and who's the other one that is trying to remember her name now, not Kelly, and
Charlize Theron.
I'm trying to remember who she played. She plays, I'm calling up the IMDb right now, and it just closed on me. What the fuck? Hang
on, she plays Megan, that other blonde chick.
Kelly.
Megan Kelly.
Megan Kelly, that's right.
Megan Kelly.
Like we're all Megan the same Kelly. Or something. All yeah. All chicks are the the same.
Yes, you all are. Yes.
Nice.
But
she plays Megyn Kelly. There we go. I don't know why I didn't think of that either. Megyn Kelly.
Yes, it was again another movie where the movie was but there were good performances. I mean, she was good. You looked at her and the way she talked, you totally forgot she was Charlize Theron. Nicole Kidman was good, I think, albeit a little miscast. Margot Robbie, I don't think, deserved the Oscar nomination. I thought she was just okay. Mm-hmm. Kate McKinnon's in it, who steals a scene, every scene she's in, as usual. John Lithgow as Roger Ailes was really good. You know, you just couldn't, now how true is some of this stuff? And there were gag orders, and this is being told from a certain perspective that, you know, how true some of these things are. But some of these things were, if they were accurate and true, yeesh. Boy, things were not good at Fox News for the
shocking.
Females.
Shocking. Mm-hmm. Can't believe it.
So, I think Charlize did good, but I don't think she's going to win. I think Scarlett's going to win for that. You know, you don't get nominated for two acting awards and not win one of them. So I think Scarlett's taking it. Miranda, you and I saw Spies in Disguise.
We did.
What did you think of it?
I actually really liked it. I thought it was really cute. A lot of people were like, I don't want to hear Will Smith be a pigeon for an hour and a half. And actually, it was really fun.
It was really cute.
It was a bird movie.
Didn't realize this was a bird movie. Would have seen it otherwise.
Tom Holland was really adorable. He and Will Smith, I know that it was a cartoon, but they really seemed to mesh well together, and I really enjoyed it. And they kind of set it up in a way where, like, this could be a new cartoon franchise, and I think I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw it with my daughter, who...
Because she loves Tom.
I would say, yes, she loves Tom Holland. That includes his voice. She actually did go see Doolittle with her mom, so, her crush on Tom Holland knows no bounds. But it was enjoyable. It was funny. It was, thought the pigeons were cute.
Yes, the pigeon gang was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. And some of the gadgets they use and some of the different spy tech was fun.
I had some sad, relatable mom moments.
Aww.
To the kid that Tom Holland plays, because mm-hmm. he's kind of treated as like the outsider, and he's weird, and he's different, and I don't know. That one's in the feels a little.
Getting the vapors. Then, of course, I saw Little Women. Could not stay awake for it.
You're not the only person that I've heard say that.
You know, it was kind of like, I know it's been told before, and I kind of, was kind of lost because I'm like, what is happening now? Which one is Timothée Chalamet trying to get with? What is happening here? Because there were time jumps in it, but didn't tell you there were time jumps. It was like, is because Saoirse Ronan's hair is longer, or not like Pixie? Now I'm supposed to guess it's a different time period. I don't know.
Polly said the other night, he was like, wait, you saw Little Women? Haven't we done this before? And that's kind of how I felt.
Yes, exactly. So I think, and like I said, Saoirse Ronan is like the young Meryl Streep. Just because she's in something, she's going to get nominated. So, yes, as the flute plays.
I was going to say, in my head,
sorry, I did that with my nose.
Oh, God.
It's quite the talent. So, yeah, Little Women, that's a hard pass. Spend your time a little wiser. 1917.
Playing flute, perhaps.
By playing, learning the Irish flute.
With your nose.
With your nose. While underwater. Anyway, so also coming out.
SpongeBob.
Hey, don't be messing with SpongeBob. 1917 came out. I thought it was one of the, just like Ford v Ferrari, it's probably much better in the theater on the big screen because of, the scope of it. Some of these battles and the fact that it is a quote unquote single shot the entire time, where there are times, though, where you're like, oh, yeah, they must have made a hit there. And there are other times. Well, you can clearly tell, but it was a well-told story of, like, we don't get a lot of World War One movies, mm-hmm. especially from perspectives other than the American perspective. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend this movie. I mean, it could well, again, like I said, we're doing this pre-Oscars, and the Oscars will have taken place. It could do very well the night of the Oscars in terms of Best Picture, Best Director. There were no acting to stand out. I mean, there were some, you know, big names in small roles in this movie. You know, you had Colin Firth as the general, and Benedict Cumberbatch shows up also in this movie. You know, he's no Tom Hiddleston, but, you know, still.
I'm actually super interested in watching this one still.
Yeah. No, I
need to get to the theater and see it.
I would recommend it even at home. You know, you got a nice big TV, probably. So it's engaging. And you'll kind of, like, you know, want to see these two guys succeed in their mission. And that's a
great Dunkirk prequel.
Dunkirk, I was on because you really didn't get invested in many of the characters in that movie. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool how they showed the three perspectives in that movie, like by sea, by air, and by land. And I actually was familiar with the story of Dunkirk, being as I've worked for the History Channel. So all these little things of history that, you know, you don't really see movies about when they come up. It's like, oh, I know that. I remember what happened there. Mm. They were trapped and they had to get out somehow. And they used civilians. Yeah, sure. That's the ticket. So we're going to close on the big movie of the year, of the decade, of the last 25 years. A movie.
Cats.
Yes. Cats. Yes. Now and forever. At the Winter Garden Theater. Now, we're talking about a Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. Now, we were actually the panel by Mr. Criscolo hosted Star Wars. What was it called? It was called like the Star Wars Saga or End of the Saga, the Star Wars Story or whatever. Scott did a great job moderating and bringing us all together to talk about from the beginning, from the very, you know, Lucas in school. And we went all the way through all the movies and all the prequels, and we kind of avoided really getting into the plot and our thoughts on this specific movie and, you know, things we liked, things we didn't like, to save it for this show. So let's go to Jenny. We'll start with you. What do you think of Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker? Was it a satisfying conclusion to the Skywalker saga?
I super loved it. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of the ones who were pretty low on The Last Jedi, so I had mixed feelings going into it. Usually, mostly pretty positive just for the J.J. Abrams of it all, because I loved Force Awakens, so I felt like he could close out the series and do a really good job, and I thought it was complete fan service. It was beautiful. Like, I really, really, really loved it. It was breakneck pace. There was nothing that was boring in it to me. There were some heartbreaking deaths. There were some amazing, you know, action scenes, fight scenes, a little bit of a love story in there, if you want to call it that. It was everything. Like, I really, really, really loved it. And I was so happy that I was not disappointed. So happy for that.
All right. Tim, what did you think of Rise of Skywalker?
Thought it was decent. I'm definitely lower on it than Jenny. The problem with this series, the sequel trilogy, is that you had The Force Awakens, and I wasn't the biggest fan in the world of that, but it set a lot of things up, right? And The Last Jedi came along, and it felt like The Last Jedi was a sequel to an entirely different movie than The Force Awakens. And so now we have The Rise of Skywalker, and it's sort of having to do a lot of the building that The Last Jedi
didn't really do or that walked back and still serve as like this satisfying conclusion. So again, it feels like the sequel feels like the conclusion to another trilogy other than the one that we got. So these three films all feel like different entries from an entirely different trilogy. So it's just so very disjointed. And I guess that's what's disappointing to me is that, I mean, they set out, Disney did, in acquiring Lucasfilm, Star Wars, to do a new trilogy. And we knew from the outset it's going to be a trilogy. And you would think, how hard is it to plan for a coherent trilogy where this is your story and this is what you need to accomplish? And they didn't do a great job of that. It just didn't seem like there was any planning beyond what's just our next movie. And I so don't get that at all. And I don't understand how this exists under the same just overall corporate umbrella as the inevitable comparison, that being the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is trilogies within phases within this gigantic tapestry, and it all fits together, right? And they couldn't even manage to get three movies that felt like they were part of the same overall structure. So, I mean, that was sort of disappointing from the standpoint of big picture, but I mean, this film had to accomplish a lot. I mean, at the end of the day, it had to be not only a competent, technically well-made, well-produced film, but it had to be the conclusion to this sequel trilogy and send out the Skywalker saga all at the same time. And I think under the constraints that existed, it did a decent job. Maybe not as well as it could have. And of course, I haven't even mentioned the fact that they have lost. We have lost Carrie Fisher, of course, who it seemed like was going to play a much, much larger role in this film. And that had to get reduced down to what they were able to work with in terms of unused footage. So there's just a lot working against this movie. And, I'm still not quite sure where I land on it, just in the grand scheme of Star Wars, you know, nine films and two spinoffs. But it wasn't like, oh God, they've ruined Star Wars forever. Now I'm never going to see another Star Wars. Of course I am. And I'm fine with where they've left the franchise. So it's hard for me to be that disappointed these days when it comes to a Star Wars movie. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Skywalker saga ended with the original trilogy. And as I said on our big Star Wars retrospective, any other Star Wars I get at this point in my life, I just consider a bonus. It's, you know, it's not that deep. It's just not. So, yeah, I don't know. What else to really say without getting into the weeds? So I'll leave it there.
All right. Miranda, what were your thoughts on Rise of Skywalker?
I didn't love it like Jenny did. I didn't hate it either. There were some things that were a little like, for me. And then there were some things that like, it was like, I finally got what I wanted, but then again, I didn't. So like, I was not satiated there. So, you know, not satisfied. Everybody knows what I'm talking about.
You're talking about a Rey and no, maybe not. Never mind.
What are you talking about? Say it. Say it.
I needed for everybody. I just needed dark side babies. Okay. I just needed
dark side
to win and there to be like beautiful little dark side babies. That's all I was asking for. Like, apparently that was too much to ask for. Whatever.
Dark side babies.
Yes, I just wanted Rey and Kylo to like just when he's like take my hand. I'm like, do it. Like that's what I needed. I just needed them to like.
You wanted her to turn and have dark babies, is what you're saying.
No, I wanted her to have dark babies.
Okay. that's the call of the dark side there. I think maybe my feelings about this film were kind of nostalgia based because, like we said, like I'm probably
Star Wars.
It was the only one probably out of most of our people that have seen every Star Wars movie in the theater on original release. So like the moment that crawl started, I got the feels because it was like, this is the last crawl I'm going to see in the theater for the first time. Oh my God. There were plenty of other times. I mean, when we thought Chewie died, I was like, oh, but what even worse was when Chewie finds out about Leia's death.
Yes, that because was awful.
He drops to his knee and you're like, he has lost everyone. I mean, we lose C-3PO for about a scene and then he gets rebooted.
That was kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Agreed.
As soon as I saw that, I knew that was going to be that's bullshit from Tim Capel line. how fucking convenient is this bullshit?
I love the little guy, though, they had at that.
Yeah, he was cool.
That the new droid, I was like, here, just, you know, BB-8 needs a sidekick, I guess, or a little bitch, maybe, I don't know. But it was like, I thought I would love to have seen Carrie Russell, like her face in this movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of this stuff, you know, I mean, we were talking off mic about Fast and Furious. It's kind of like some of those things like, you know, you just accept it, you know, suspend your disbelief. You know, how is this whole Palpatine thing happening? And, I mean, that he's been around ever since and there were clues we just didn't know him. Kind of, maybe, sort of believe that.
That kind of needed an extra pass just because I feel like there were parts of it that I didn't understand. Just, like, is he actually back? Has he been resurrected or is this like who he's always been and the Palpatine who died was like a clone or something that he made? Like I didn't understand like what his role in relation to the other films really was.
Yeah, he was kind of muddled a little bit. I mean, I did mark out big time, though, for when Lando shows up at the end with the fleet at that planet. And I leaned over to my daughter and I'm like, on your left. And she had like this big smile on her face. So that was a great moment. A little callback to Endgame. But on the whole, in the moment, I was satisfied. But I haven't seen it yet again. But with repeat viewings, it'll probably start to poke holes in some of that and maybe bring down my rating for that movie, but it was a satisfactory conclusion considering, like Tim said, the death of Carrie Fisher, which probably caused a major pivot or rewrite to occur in terms of what direction this trilogy was going to go in. So,
I mean, it led to a lot of awkward scenes with Maz Kanata going, well, Leia would have really wanted you to do this, or Leia would have said this. Leia would have given you this medal if, like, just it's like just very awkward, very clear that was meant to be a totally different character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other final thoughts? How would you guys rate this fall winter movie season on the whole? Up, down, in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, just based on what I saw, most of it was pretty good. So, I mean, granted, I didn't see everything, but what I managed to get to the theater for was good. So I'm happy with it.
Right. Tim, Miranda?
Yeah, I guess it was as good as any fall or winter film season generally is. I mean, it's not a super memorable time of year for movies traditionally, so I mean, it didn't seem appreciably better or worse than other. I mean, we didn't get a Venom this year, so
I was.
I don't know what that's.
Venom.
Yeah,
we're getting a Morbius soon now.
Yeah, but it doesn't look as bad as. Doesn't look as bad as Venom, though.
We'll talk about that.
As good as Venom, you mean?
Yes. Miranda, what do you think of this?
Wonderfully bad as Venom.
Lord. I'd say in the middle. And the only reason I say that is because there are a lot that I really wanted to see. And because I haven't seen it, I don't think that I can go high or low, if that makes sense. So I'm going to say in the middle.
In terms of what I actually saw, I would say there are more hits than misses. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't really stuff that I walked out of saying, ugh. You know, I was more satisfied with maybe Zombieland, Double Tap. Was maybe,
Little Women.
Well, thankfully I didn't go to the theater for that one.
Okay.
I fell asleep on the comfort of my own couch. So, yeah, I just couldn't do it. The completest in me wanted to, but nope. So, we are going to put a pin, a button, a ribbon on the 2019. Now we can conclude 2019, Tim. I'm going to let it go finally and say goodbye to it. It was a decent year. Not bad, but, you know, it was kind of like the fall was kind of like our standard. You get a couple of good horror movies and thrillers early on. You get like one or two surprises, Joker being that surprise this year. You get a couple of kid movies. You get that movie around Thanksgiving that's like for the adults, that's a lot of fun. Then you get a couple of blockbusters that hopefully satisfy you. And then there's a cute few that come out of nowhere. Like, I had no idea what the hell Marriage Story was up until like a month ago. I had no clue until I started seeing it get nominated. I'm like, what is this? It's on Netflix? I don't know. Shows how often I go on Netflix these days, unless I have to. So
I thought it was just going to be like a Kramer versus Kramer remake. Mm-hmm. But it was more its own thing, so
yeah,
maybe I guess that's good.
Kramer versus Kramer for the modern age, maybe.
Yeah, for rich people arguing between which coast to live on.
All right, so that concludes this episode, though, of Looking Forward, Looking Back. Next time we get together, we are doing our big summer movie preview in terms of movie talk, but actually, the very next time we get together, we are doing our live watch of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Thanks to my win with the little wrinkle of the biggest bomb in the summer movie wager. So hopefully we all have a good time and just try to make each other laugh for an hour and a half to 2 hours. That's all we can hope for. And I can't think of a better crew to do it with.
That's all I ever do, Andy.
I know, Jenny. And we love you for that. So let's kind of go around. This will probably come out a little bit after we record. So kind of just talk about what you're up to and what some of your new shows are, direct people. Tim, what do you got going on?
I don't know. Subscribe to the Jenny Position, where you can hear me on a great many shows on Jenny's wonderful podcast network. Check out Talking WCW on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. We will have another great episode coming out later this month in February. I'm not going to say who it's about, but it's one that I'm kind of looking forward to. We also started a new show, Jenny and I did, with our friend Jacob Williams. It's called PTB NXT. We are reviewing chronologically in order the NXT programs on the WWE Network beginning in the year 2014. So this is what we kind of consider the network era of NXT. Although the program existed prior to that, we really wanted to start our journey with the network era of NXT. So, yeah, we dropped our first episode about a week ago, I guess, and we'll have another coming soon. And we're just going to be going week to week covering the episodic television and takeovers. So do check that out if you are fans of NXT, as we are. The aforementioned Marvel Age podcast, I am one quarter of, that is on this, the Place to Be Nation Pup feed. We're starting a new year of Marvel Comics, that being 1973. Very, very soon. So, yeah, more Marvel Age coming your way if you're a fan of that program and of 1970s Marvel Comics. And I think that'll do it for me.
And what's your Twitter handle?
I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8 on Twitter.
Awesome. Yes, I'm looking forward to checking out PTB and NXT. Jambalaya Jake, super nice guy. Got to meet him at WrestleMania. Anybody that shows up with an Ico Pro t-shirt is okay in my book. So I highly suggest that. You know, I'm glad Jacob is moving into the co-hosting arena. He's been a guest on some shows, so I'm very happy.
Well, it's his idea. Yeah. The show was his idea, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Yep.
And
so
he couldn't seek out a better pair of veterans to bring him into the fold, so to speak. Jenny, what else you got going on over there on the Jenny position?
At the Jenny position, well, Timothy is a co-host of The Journey Through Infinity. We're rewatching all of the MCU movies one by one. So our latest episode is about Thor, the fourth movie in the MCU. It's a really good episode. Also, you can hear an episode of Freak Out Drive-In with me and Matt Souza. We watched Alien, and that was really fun, too. I will let Miranda tell you about Geek and Sassy. So I will also mention Jenny and the Gems on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We have a new episode coming out soon, and it will probably be batshit insane because usually all the Gems episodes are. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Jenny Position, and my Facebook page, Jenny Position. You can leave a review or drop me a line. No dick pics, please.
Okay. Miranda, what's wrong with you?
So, of course, our Geek and Sassy over at Jenny Position, we just gave you guys, should be dropping soon, a new Reads, Dreams, and Downloads for your listening ears, kind of catching you up to what we've listened to and watched and read over the Christmas holidays. We are gearing up for the Sassies, which is the best award show ever in all time, so you should participate. When those ballots drop, we'd love for you to participate in that. And Jenny and I are like planning some other things coming up too, of course. And then, of course, Andy, you and I have our Disney podcast watch that we are doing with our friend Chad. Our first episode was Snow White. Our second will be soon. That'll be once a month. Pinocchio is our next one. And we just did the Oscars preview too. The kind of a, it's kind of like a will they. Who will win? Who should win? Who won't win? It's kind of fun.
Yes, and if you'd like to hear more Star Wars Episode 9 hatred, tune into the Oscar podcast. our guest, Pauly Bernardo of the Pauly Perspective column on PlaceToBeNation.com, did not like that movie and was not quiet about that fact. He did not like that movie. So every time we got to a category where that was nominated, we got an earful. So
I wasn't quiet about a certain movie I didn't care for either, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I actually really liked that movie, so
I'm sorry.
So Miranda and Andy button heads there for the one of the few times.
Yes, yes, yes.
So anyway, for me, on the latest episode of Laugh in Theater that dropped on Groundhog Day. Tim and I, we watched Groundhog Day.
Yes, we did.
Great episode. Tons of fun. Tons of laughs. And, you know, a little... made you think a little bit, trying to figure out how long he was stuck in that time loop. That really boggled our minds for the duration of that movie. So,
fun to think about.
So check that out. Also, Miranda mentioned the Oscar preview pod, as well as Pop Goes the Classics, Disney Animated Features with Miranda, I, and Chad Campbell. So yeah, look for those monthly. And coming soon, the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World live watch, like I mentioned before. New episodes of Laughing Theater. I have the Godfather, Nate Milton, stopping by to watch Black Dynamite. Year and Pop will be back in a couple of weeks with the crew, hashtag Oldcast. We're getting into the 80s. That's right, 1980 we were going over. Check out the next episode of Body Pressure Luck, where I am the third man with the co-host duo of JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan. Also, check me out coming to the wrestling feed very soon. I have two shows debuting. One is kind of an offshoot, and one is a brand new show. So check that out. I will tell you the offshoot is actually a wrestling version, a standalone wrestling version of The Great Debate. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
I will. Thank you, Jenny. Hopefully you will be a guest on an episode. But the... I'm thankful for Scott and Nate and Steve for having me on Main Event, but their show format does not really allow for this segment to be done there anymore. And not by any reason other than they kind of, there's more for them to talk about in terms of current product. So I want to keep doing these wrestling great debates. So these will be standalone shows, and I can't wait to get over on the wrestling feed, and hopefully everybody enjoys it, because they were a ton of fun to do, and I want to keep that up. So, I want to thank...
Sounds good.
Yep. I want to thank Jennifer Smith, Miranda Berthold, and Tim Capel for joining me here on the latest episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you next time when we watch Scott Pilgrim, and then we will preview the summer movies. So we'll see you then. Take care, everybody.
Ah!
Jesus Christ. Did that sound like Let It Go?
No. Maybe you should, maybe you should let that flute go. Oh.
Oh God.